This is episode 321 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, February 28, 2011.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Mr. Zuckerberg, do I have your full attention?
Why would anyone trust this government not to make a complete and utter shambolic mess of the national broadband network?
Which part of time would they like us to go back to? 1960, 1930?
Can you really give that guarantee when you don't seem to know what peak speed is? I'll tell you what it is.
Okay, great. Let's give everybody a case.
The future is here.
Like how technology has caught up with reality.
Ever since Telstra was privatised, Australians have suffered.
Technology has had a huge impact on our love lives.
On air, on the internet and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, I'm Andrew McComb and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. The next chapter in the David and Goliath stoush between Australia's number two ISP, iiNet, and the might of the world's movie houses was written last Thursday when iiNet won the latest appeal over peer-to-peer piracy on their network. But the door has been left open for a further appeal. The full bench of the federal court dismissed the film industry's appeal against a February 2010 judgment, which found ISP iiNet had not authorised copyright infringement on the ISP's network. Justice Emmett said that the court agreed with the film industry's assertion that right holders' copyright had been infringed, but disputed the characterisation of the infringements. iiNet chief Michael Malone has blasted the film industry for wasting 2 years suing the ISP rather than coming to the table to negotiate a genuine long-term solution to online piracy. He said that the ISP industry shared a common view on the issue of copyright and did not believe that copyright could be resolved using purely technological means, for example, digital rights management. The full bench appeal was an important escalation in the high-profile case, but the verdict is unlikely to resolve the battle. It's widely expected that AFACT will lodge a further appeal with the High Court in Canberra. Failing the final appeal, the next remedy could be sought through government legislation, which will give fuel to Stephen Conroy's mandatory ISP filter.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
we check out the pros and cons of iiNet's win against AFAC last week. Apple has succession issues as well as the launch of the new iPad, almost a year to the day of version 1. Sony launches Anubis FM streaming music service just days after Curiosity. And Harvey Norman is on the slide, down 17% in first half profit. That's all to come on today's edition of Tech Talk Radio. First up, here's this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio news desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, iiNet victorious as a film industry appeal is dismissed. The ACMA expands mobile jamming laws. Apple iPad 2 on track for March the 2nd. Apple shareholders reject succession plan, and Twitter reinstates rival third-party applications. The full bench of the federal court has dismissed the film industry's appeal against a February 2010 judgment, which found ISP iiNet had not authorised copyright infringement on its network. Last Thursday in the federal court, Justice Emmett said that the court agreed with the film industry's assertion that rights holders' copyright had been infringed, but disputed the characterisation of the infringements. He concluded that the appeal should be dismissed. However, he said it's fair to say that the appellants, AFACT, have been successful on some grounds. Therefore, the parties should be heard further. Despite the appeal being squashed, the court warned the ISP industry that rights holders might still find an avenue for further action. The judgment said that even though the copyright owners are not entitled to the relief claimed in this proceeding, it does not follow that that is an end of the matter. The ISP appears to have scraped through on the numbers, with Justices Emmett and Nicholas dismissing the appeal, and Justice Jago preferring the argument of the film industry. iiNet Chief Michael Malone spoke outside the federal court in Sydney.
We're very relieved. Our original contention was upheld, but we don't believe that we ever authorised or did anything to encourage customers to breach copyright. We won at the lower court, we won at the federal court now in the appeals, but I guess one of the points we made is this legal action hasn't stopped one customer from downloading anywhere in Australia. So I guess we go same as we said last time, invite rights holders back, let's make the content available legally and legitimately so customers can get access to it, and let's find a better way to be able to police those that don't do the right thing. And I'd hope the rights holders will now see this isn't getting them where they want to go, and that they'll return back to the table now and say, well, let's find a better way. We've wasted 2 years now, and it really hasn't done anything to address this problem.
Both parties have been asked to make submissions as to the costs of the first instance and the appeal. The Australian Communications and Media Authority has expanded national mobile jamming prohibitions to include WiMAX and Wi-Fi frequency bands. Last week, the telecommunications regulator introduced the Radio Communications Prohibition of PMTS Jamming Devices Declaration 2011 following an April 2010 review of existing laws. ACMA's declaration made way for new legislation that would commence Monday, February 28th, to account for the effects and requirements of new and emerging technologies, including smartphones. The legislation would replace the mobile jamming prohibition made in 1999, which only applied to devices that operated in certain 2G and 3G frequency bands. Rather than specific frequency bands, the updated prohibition uses a more general description of a jamming device that the ACMA hopes will future-proof the legislation. The ACMA also plans to review standing exemptions to the prohibition. Those exemptions allow for jammers to be used in aircraft to make room for in-flight mobile services and the use of jammers for defence, law enforcement and emergency purposes. Apple is expected to launch its new iPad on March the 2nd, contrary to speculation of a delay in the latest version of the popular tablet computer. The March 2nd unveiling was originally reported in an All Things Digital blog last Tuesday. One person familiar with the matter said recent speculation about a delay until June was simply not true, as Apple is planning a launch in the same seasonal schedule as the first iPad, which went on sale in April 2010. Apple will host an event on March the 2nd, where the company is expected to take the wraps off the newest iPad model. Shares of Apple fell 3% after a Taiwanese brokerage firm said the next version of the iPad tablet computer will be delayed as manufacturer Hon Hai faces production bottlenecks due to the device's new design. But analysts quickly downplayed the report, noting that Apple has been reliable when it comes to its release schedule. The iPad was the hottest technology device of 2010, selling nearly 15 million units and sparking a slew of copycat devices from rivals. More than 50 million tablets are expected to be sold this year, with Apple capturing the bulk of the demand. Apple shareholders have rejected demands that the company disclose a succession plan for ailing CEO Steve Jobs, but approved a proposal that it adopt majority votes for board directors. With co-founder and chief executive Steve Jobs sidelined indefinitely with an undisclosed medical condition, increasingly restive investors have demanded more information about the company's future. At its annual meeting on Wednesday, shareholders of the world's most valuable technology company voted down a proposal to outline its plan for who will succeed Jobs. However, they passed a requirement for a majority vote before appointing unopposed board directors in a key victory for influential shareholder CalPERS, the largest US pension fund. Tim Cook, Jobs' top lieutenant, took the spotlight as shareholders dug for answers not just about Jobs, but also the company's succession plan, what it might do with its $60 billion US cash pile, and what devices may follow the iPad and the iPhone in coming years. Twitter has lifted bans on two popular mobile Twitter applications over the weekend. The microblogging firm reinstated updated versions of Uber Media's Twitter apps, Uber Twitter for BlackBerry and Tweedroid for Android devices, which were banned for violating its privacy policy and an alleged trademark infringement. Twitter's initial review indicated that steps have been taken to remedy the violations for these applications. Twitter's ban on Uber Media's mobile apps caught the developer off guard, according to its CEO and founder, Bill Gross. Gross explained on the weekend that Twitter objected to its use of Uber Twitter, now Uber Social, as well as its use of a tweet elongation service that could expose private messages to the public. The ban has sparked accusations that Twitter is cracking down on third-party app developers that are rivaling its own ambitions in the mobile space. Mark Suster, an annoyed Uber Twitter user and Californian venture capitalist, called out Twitter over its decision to promote its own mobile apps on the day it banned Uber Media's. If Twitter does have a problem with third-party mobile app developers becoming rivals, that situation is set to become more fierce, with Uber Media reportedly close to finalising the acquisition of the hugely popular TweetDeck. I'm not Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Telstra is the only major telco refusing to give full warranties for iPhone customers within the two-year contracts.
If I could have mini XLRs on the sides of my head, yeah, I would change the content of users' tweets in order to make money.
That's disgusting.
That's pretty bad, isn't it?
As it was growing in popularity, I was rapidly adding features to the website every night to cope with the increasing demand.
And they're the ones I mow the lawn with.
The name of Sony's new service is a bit of a mouthful.
Wireless can't carry everything.
Well, this is what was really interesting. No one knew. It just sort of shut down.
Why would someone count them all?
It's a very good question you ask, two dogs.
Now, the fifth type of headphones I was talking about, all headphones that don't have the word Sennheiser written on them.
Were you laughing because Andrew said HTC?
Yes. Yeah.
An estimated 89% of all emails were spam in 2010.
He's an audio snob, ladies and gentlemen.
Have you done a sponsorship deal we don't know about?
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Now we've got the official part of the show out of the way. Hello, everybody. We're here to carry on and discuss things ad infinitum. Have a three-quarters of an hour Coro segment because Dr. Ron's in this evening. And he's got Coro. So welcome aboard. This is Tech Talk Radio. Hopefully you've all got your Twitter feeds back if you're on Twidroid, Graham. Twidroid is how you pronounce that.
Did I say it wrong?
You did.
I'm sorry.
You said Tweedroid.
Yeah, not Dr. Ron.
And yes, you are not Dr. Ron.
I'm not
That's
Dr.
Good.
Ron.
Hey, good job on the news, Graham. Thanks
very
for stepping
good.
In at the last minute.
Thank you very much.
What happened? You decided to go away because you're on holidays.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Someone had to.
I realised that the...
You got to the last week of your 4 weeks. I think, oh, God, better go away.
The 11th hour and 59th minute of my holidays. I'm going to get away for a couple of days.
How's the deforestation going in the front yard, by the way?
It's all done and dusted. And I'm glad you asked because I had an electric chipper or mulcher working. Was working overtime there for a few days. Chopping up trees and branches and bark and stuff.
You did.
And I took up the challenge. I took up the TARDIS challenge. I think it was the TARDIS challenge.
What, you actually put the Subi in the big bin?
No, I haven't photoshopped that up yet. I'll get to that. But I was using a very loud electric piece of garden equipment and I had hearing protection on and I had little earphones on inside the hearing protection. I was listening to podcasts.
Yeah.
Ah.
And it worked very well.
Now, so what, you weren't mowing the lawn, but you were chipping instead.
Correct. And I think that chipping makes 10 times as much noise as mowing the lawn.
It does.
At least. So there we go. TARDIS's mistake is that he's not wearing his hearing protection.
I think that's it. And I've got some correspondence to that effect a bit later.
Ah, excellent.
So it was quite timely.
Free mulch at Dr. Ron's house.
Who's that voice?
You're not allowed to speak till you've been introduced.
Sorry.
You are? Who said that? Is that your rule?
I thought it was a radio rule.
Oh, okay. Ladies and gentlemen, Lena van Deventer.
Hi. You said it right.
Good. Woo. I've probably been practicing.
We've all been practicing. We've had Lena pronunciation sessions in your absence.
I rang Lena once. I rang Dr. Ron 10 times. How do you say it? Can you run that past me again? We've been doing promo shooting across the week, you see. Yeah.
How are you, Lena?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. Going okay.
Good. Lena put me onto something very good, which we'll talk about later. Have you been checking out the Tech Talk Radio newspaper that comes out now daily?
Yes. Are you going to preempt the website of the week already? Okay.
You've done that yourself. Oh. I'm not going to do it.
I have been watching the Tech Talk daily newspaper.
It itself too. This is a new facility which is you can actually do some great stuff with. And yeah, for those of you who've been following
You're
us
welcome.
On Twitter... Lena put us onto that. We'll have a lot of fun with that. Well, stay tuned and watch this, but anyway. And you've probably been wondering why, in the beginning of the program, I was teasing that that Harvey Norman chap. What the hell's Harvey Norman got to do with technology when his profits go down? Net profits go down 17%.
What does Harvey Norman have to do with technology?
Well, he came out...
Nothing.
Very little.
He shot himself in the foot with this, I think, because his... I think people have been vacating his store in droves. This is me purely speculating. But he basically said a while back that online shopping was killing the retail front, which we also spoke about that with Borders last week as well.
Yes.
And anyway, poor old Harvey, Jerry, he's down 70% on his first half year net profit. A bit like Telstra, really.
Go cry in your big bag of money. Said it before, say it again.
Well, absolutely. What was that acronym you used? Yeah. Anyway, we won't go there.
STFU.
That's the one.
Yes. It was GTFO.
Was it?
Yes.
I could have been either.
Moving right along. So we were talking a little bit about that, but yeah, Jerry probably has himself to blame there in respect that he got into everybody who shops online. And I must admit, I personally decided not to shop at his. I went there and got a price and then went elsewhere.
Yep.
So I'm not buying here. This is the man who's trying to shoot the internet in the foot and, you know, blame the problems of the world on online trading, which is not the case.
Apparently, if you go to his website and try and buy something, you can buy it on his website, but then you have to go to the shop to pick it up.
How's that work? Normally, you buy on other websites, they bring it to you.
They bring it to you. That's the whole point of buying on the website. Yeah. Yeah, I think he's missed the point entirely.
We could be becoming a big country of people who shop in our lounge room chairs and stuff like that.
Yeah, we're turning into Americans, can't you tell?
No, we're not.
No.
US Americans.
US Americans, yep.
Yeah. I don't think you can actually buy anything, can you, on the Harvey Norman website? I think it's just an online catalogue. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I thought you could buy on it, but you have to
do something
pick it up.
With a store or something. Really? That's really dumb, isn't it? It's really backwards.
Well, if you don't embrace it, you're going to miss out, and some people are starting to miss out now. Anyway. Mm. Now, Dr. Ron, you have some Coro to kick off the beginning of this Show 9 of 2011.
It's flying along already, isn't it?
It is.
Show 9.
Show 9.
It's crazy. Chat.techtalkradio.com.au is where we all are at the moment.
We had a bit of an earthquake during the last time we came on the radio. Our friends in New Zealand.
Look, the day after, didn't we? We went live.
Yeah.
Oh, wasn't that horrible?
We had a crew for one of our television programs in... Actually, right slap bang in the middle of Christchurch.
Are they okay?
Yeah, they're okay. They were booked to fly out at 3 o'clock when the earthquake shook at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Oh. So,
did they get out? No, presumably not.
No, they didn't get out.
The airport wasn't there.
The airport got shut. They ended up heading down to Auckland and flew out of Auckland.
Up to Auckland.
Is it?
Yes.
How do you know? Depends which way you look at it. It's not.
No, north is up, Andrew.
North is up.
How do you know? Depends which way you're looking at it.
Andrew, you're at number 3-1. Move on.
Is this the penultimate show?
Some people say they're going down to Brisbane. No, you're going up to Brisbane.
Well, it depends which way you're looking at. If you're from
hang on. We've got listeners in Cairns. They can go down to Brisbane.
Correct.
We've
got listeners in the United States. They can come down to Australia.
Yeah.
Sorry, Dr. Ron. Anyway, we're talking just briefly about that earthquake. Hopefully, all of our friends who listen to us up north I'm just trying to get the name of the bay. Hawke's Bay.
Hawke's Bay, New Zealand.
Napier was devastated by an earthquake in the 30s. Like a really bad one. Ruined the whole town, and they rebuilt in the 30s. That's why it's the world's best Art Deco city, because they had to rebuild everything all at the same time. So they know how it feels.
Yeah, well, when the earth shook, as I say, we had a crew over there. I was looking at the pictures today that came out of there pre the shake and post the shake, and it was a completely different city. So anyway, our thoughts go out to our New Zealand listeners.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
We're with you guys. Dr. Ron, Coro.
Correspondence, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au is the email address as well, so you can send us your questions there or your comments or your feedback. Firstly, we heard last week from White Salmon, and we spoke about White Salmon's comments on air. And Alan, who's White Salmon, says, "Good evening, panel. I didn't really plan on White Salmon as a screen name, Andrew." He singles you out, Andrew.
Ooh.
"Alan works just fine by me. I live in the town of White Salmon."
You're picking on me tonight. Why should anyone else be any different?
"What else is new? Which is perched on the south bluff of the Columbia River Gorge, with the White Salmon River bordering us to the west." So it's not smoked salmon. Smoked is someone else.
Yeah.
Smoked is a regular Tech Talk personality.
I'm confused with all of our salmons that
but
we have logging.
White Salmon.
too much salmon.
"The Columbia River Gorge," says White Salmon, "is home to world-class windsurfing, not to mention just being a very large river, 1 mile across here." That's pretty large. That's what we call a lake. The White Salmon River was...
It could be a river if you're talking about northeastern Victoria or even some parts of Queensland.
Yes.
Or an inland sea.
And that could be called a lake too.
Yes.
"The White Salmon River was named after the abundance of spawning salmon returning to the creek, whose flesh turned colour from red to pinkish white."
This is Tech Talk Travel.
"The Lewis and Clark expedition first discovered it for the Europeans in 1805.
I thought that was a
TV show about Superman.
I was going to say Lewis
and Clark, yeah. Mate, oh, that's interesting. "Anyhow, thanks for your time you put into making these podcasts available. You're welcome, Alan, on behalf of Graham. I don't really remember how I got tangled up in Aussie tech. Neither do we. It's been too long since I started listening. I consciously move the TTR podcast to the end of my playlist, saving the best for last. The technology doesn't change from one place to another, but I enjoy the different perspective from people south of the equator who stand on their heads all day. Warmest regards,
I told you.
White Salmon."
Thank you very much.
It's the radio shows White Salmon rejects that make Tech Talk Radio the best.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
My advice to anybody, if you've got a spare 5 minutes, is to hit Google image search and search for White Salmon Washington in images, and you'll see just what a spectacularly beautiful place this man comes from. So, yeah, it's really, really worth having a quick look.
Okay. Anything else there to table, Dr. Ryan?
Damo, the geek.
Oh, yes.
The Greek.
No, not Damo. You're never going to let me live that down.
Hey, smoked salmon's in our chat at the moment. That's a different salmon.
Smoked is in our chat room, which is a different salmon to Alan, who's white salmon. Chat.tech.com.
Is that a place too, while we're on travel shows?
Smoked?
No.
Where?
Yes.
What?
Exactly.
Okay. Damo says, "G'day, Dr. Ron, via email. I know
I can't
TikTok
wait
Radio
to listen to that back
for
now.
The most is an audio format show. But if for nothing else, we can find an opportunity to wind up the Apple fanboys, and this video has to be this week's football.
Oh.
Professionally done too, and safe for general audience." Now, Damo has posted a YouTube link there. If you hop onto YouTube and search for the words "brand new iPhone 5, the top result should have a lazy 1.1 million views or so. That's the one he's referring to. I'll pop the link in the show notes. Also, it's quite funny, actually. It's about a prototype iPhone 5. Which is very funny. "Caught the show last week live," says Damo, "streaming on my Desire PMSL while walking through my local shop." What's that mean, Lena?
It means he had a good laugh.
Okay. While he was walking through his...
He's losing bodily functions while laughing.
Oh. While he was walking through his local shop.
On the Oscars today.
And he did this upon hearing Lena openly discussing the crack in her iPhone and data issues. How's Graham's heart going? Lol. Missed getting into the chat room. Was cooking up a storm for my beloved Valentine. Wasn't willing to risk it despite your advice. Oh, we advise people to tune into Tech Talk Radio rather than spend the evening with their Valentine. That's what we did, didn't it? Great show as usual, says Damo. Cheers from Damo the Geek. Thank you, Damo. P.S. Murden on the forum says, "I really thought that the fifth type of headphones you alluded to would be active noise-cancelling phones."
Oh, here we go. One for Graham.
Oh, hang on. Let me plug my headphones back in there. I was listening to a YouTube video.
I know we could hear it.
Oh, sorry.
We're boring him.
P.S. Murden says, "Graham, I really thought that the fifth type of headphones you alluded to would be active noise-cancelling headphones, though that may be overkill for MOAphones."
MOAphones.
Yes, although...
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I suspect the...
MOAphones.
The earbuds underneath the hearing protection is probably the better way to go to make sure that you don't damage your eardrums.
And that worked for me.
Yeah.
Good success.
Because then two things. You probably should be wearing hearing protection anyway when you're mowing the lawn and also,
chippy-chippying.
Yeah. Active noise cancelling. Yeah, that's a good point, and it works really well. What it does is it has a little microphone that picks up the surrounding sound and then feeds that back into your ears with exactly the opposite phase, exactly out of phase, so it cancels out so that you don't hear the surrounding sounds.
As we said, P.S. Murden recommends just using he says, muff-style ear protectors, the ones that enclose your ears completely, which you really should use anyway to protect your hearing when using noisy machinery, as Graham just said. That's what Graham said.
Sorry.
They're cheap at places like Bunnings. You can use whatever buds or in-ears you usually use.
This is all stemmed from a promo that we used to play years ago that surfaced the other day about how to listen to your podcast.
Yes.
For those of you who are completely going, what are they talking about? This is it.
Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step one, visit the iTunes Music Store and search for Tech Talk Radio in the podcast section. Step two, click subscribe and you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn, on a train, in a car, on a plane, at work,
visiting the relatives, washing the
car. I'm pleased to see that we've moved away from what did the young children say to how to listen to your podcast. See, technology is where it's at, isn't it?
Mowing the lawn on a train or in a car on a plane.
No.
Who
wrote that?
No.
Podcasting is Charlie Pressing. That's been around for a few years now, isn't it, that one, Andrew?
It has.
Now, just quickly, P.S. Murden also says, "I used to use in-ears when mowing and listening. Sennheiser, of course, CX300, Graham, in-ears."
Oh, he's Googling as we
speak. "Which were okay-ish, but he had to run them too loud for his liking."
Yeah, which is why you should wear your hearing protection over the top, would you?
There you go. Thanks, P.S. Murden. Matt88 promptly hopped on the forum and added, "I came here to post exactly the same thing. Great minds, I suppose." Thanks, Matt.
It's good to be good.
And Craig on the forum says, "I think it would be great to add a game/app of the week to the end of the show. who visits websites anymore, asks Craig. Ooh. A great way to share Stick any around. New games or iPhone, Android apps that are grabbing attention. Cheers,
okay,
Craig.
We'll whip one up, okay?
See what we can we'll do go, in the next, whip.
Next half hour.
Next half hour, 45 minutes.
All right, you'll have to talk for a bit while I go down the back and knock something up.
If you could, oh. And we'll run with the show okay. in the meantime. That's did all the correspondence.
Say,
oh, okay.
Did he say CX300s?
He said CX300s.
Yeah, they're the ones I was talking about. They're the ones that seal off in your little ear canal, and they would be really great. They're the ones I talked about last week, sounding like I had line in on the side of my head.
Cool, balanced.
Yes.
Of course. Or you fall over.
Goodness me. Yeah. Is that Cora? That's only the first quarter of the show.
He's the correspondence for the week.
For the year.
No, for the year. I know he said the year.
Yeah, exactly.
Around the world, you're listening to Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio.
Now, the big news this week was obviously iiNet. And they had their appeal. They had their day in court. Well, should I say AFACT had their appeal. They're going to be their day in court.
iiNet's going to be the best number twos we've ever had. The number two ISP.
They are the number two ISP.
That was their TV tagline promotion.
Yes, it was. Actually, I think that's a clever ad.
I think it's very clever.
I haven't seen it. Must watch a bit more commercial television.
I wouldn't
I've
panic.
Almost forgot what
no
it
need
is.
To panic, but you will get your copy of the ad.
Mm. I spoke to, just on a by the leave, I was speaking to an insurance company on the phone today, and the guy's name was Leroy. I said, have you moved across from iiNet? He laughed. So obviously they get the marketing.
Yes.
Anyway, yes, they had their day in court against AFAC, the Australian mob against that are protecting everyone, or the movie houses in particular, the copyright theft people. So AFAC, Australian Federation Against Copyright Theft, is the mob in particular.
Yep, now, and they had alleged that iiNet, by having certain plans and by not taking certain action, had encouraged their subscribers to their internet service to download movies.
Yes.
And therefore, they were going to try to punish iiNet, which is a little bit crazy.
It is a little bit, but it also set a very big precedent, and that is that...
Well, it would have had it succeed.
It would have, yes. And that is that telecommunications providers have some level of responsibility over what is carried, the information that's carried over their networks, yeah. Which...
This would be like suing Telstra first because you didn't like what somebody said on the phone.
Or suing Vic Roads because there was a car accident or something.
Oh, that might be Vic Roads' fault given the state of the roads.
Bad example. But, yes, that's right.
Well, exactly. Yeah, but what you're trying to say, if someone rings up and says, oh, there's a bomb on the plane or something like that, then the phone company can be held liable for whatever it was, if it was a hoax or something.
That's the sort of thing, yeah. Yeah.
And that just doesn't quite cut it for obvious reason. No. Well, common sense should prevail here.
So the decision was made about a year ago in the federal court. They appealed that decision. AFAC appealed the decision, which was made against them. And that appeal was also lodged in the federal court. And yes. It was thrown out. So there's only two things in my figuring that they can do now, that AFAC can do if they want to progress this. They can lodge an appeal in the High Court.
Now, that's the highest court in the land, isn't it?
It's the highest court in the land.
So, after that, it used to go to the Privy Council, but we severed ties with the mother country, didn't we? So, it stops now at the High Court.
It does. Stops at the High Court.
Now, that's the big building in Canberra next to the Art Centre. So, whilst you're out of session, you go and look at some art.
The only other thing they can do, if they don't get up in the High Court, is they can lobby for legislative changes.
Well, now, that's the conspiracy theory, Dr. Ron. Put your hat on. And
oh,
let's
it's
speak,
on. It's
let's
on.
Speak about Mr. Conroy and his so-called internet filter that's sort of waiting in the wings.
Please. Lena's making filtering noises.
She is,
that's
indeed.
What a filter sounds like.
It does.
How'd it go?
It ruins all your fun.
Careful, you'll
no
be in the promo.
No laughing. Okay, I'm not making any folly anymore.
Anyway, look.
Trust me, Lena, I'm a doctor. Come on.
That's the point, isn't it? Yes, these allegations and these sort of, they're nicking our movies can go before Mr. Conroy. Mr. Conroy can use that as leverage as well for the unscrupulous internet that we need to be protected from. Mix it all into one and we'll have the great firewall of Australia in the not-too-distant future. Having said that, if all comes to fruition. What do you think, Dr. Ron? Is this a bit far-fetched or... Because you don't believe man walked on the moon, did you?
No, it was all done on the soundstage, but that's for another night.
The shuttle got off too, by the way. Did
yeah,
you see
it did.
That?
It did. That was the one that GD went over to see in November, but unfortunately it got delayed.
Tad.
3 months, and he missed it. GD's not in the chat room tonight, but hello to
no,
GD.
No, he had a better offer.
He did. Now, conspiracy theories, I don't know. We have to wait for the appeal period to pass. To
28
see,
days.
28 days to
what are
see
they up to now?
If,
about 24 left? 23 left?
Yeah, it's only been a few days.
Thursday.
So just in this last week that the decision was made. So
if they don't appeal it, what do you reckon will happen?
Well, there's no scope for appeal. They can still lobby for legislative change, but they just have
They have to lobby, but they've got no...
Well, that's right. They can only bring to the government their case and say, we want the law changed.
So they can't take it to the High Court?
They can't make an appeal after the appeal period is passed.
Oh, no.
Ordinarily.
No, but there is an appeal period now where they can take it to the High Court.
Yep.
And in a way, it would probably be good if they did, because it would establish the precedent beyond doubt.
Mm.
Do you think the rest of the world is watching us to see what happens here?
And they're laughing.
Why do you say that?
Because they laugh at us about our video games getting banned. They laugh about us about our internet filter. They laugh about us drinking too much beer. They laugh about us on the Simpsons episode that keeps being run every week. They just laugh at us.
You're very cynical tonight, though.
I am a little bit. I was on a roll. Couldn't stop.
Yes.
No, it's not that bad. But I think it is.
But you think that the rest of the world will be going, oh, what's going on down here? I've got a funny feeling that others of power-breaking capabilities will be watching it quite interestingly.
Yes.
Especially from the UK, because they had an issue recently where I think we spoke about it last year, that they put a bill through their parliament system that allowed ISPs to hand over the names and addresses of said people offending or downloading movies and stuff like that.
Now, that's known as the three strikes policy. Is that one?
Yeah, I think so. But it's also interesting to say that Mr. Malloy came out, Malone came out from the ISP and was caught at the doorstop. He was basically saying that this hasn't...
He's the CEO of iiNet.
Yeah. He was basically saying that all the shenanigans, and I think he actually used the word shenanigans, which made me laugh.
You're not paraphrasing.
No. It could have been resolved over in the two-year period between, or in the 12 months, should I say, between the first court hearing and today. And he was also saying that it's things like DRM, digital rights management, which is not the answer. So what is the answer?
The answer is to make the content available in a format and in a manner in which we can use it on our devices and that we can pay for and that is able to be done in a reasonable way.
Yeah. Sorry, Mark, in the chat. I had Mick Molloy's in my mind. He just had to go at me in the chat. But yes, it's very true. You need to be able to do exactly that, Graham.
Yeah.
So, but I know, will it happen? Well, look what's happened to music in this country. Look what's happened to music in the United States
music
or globally.
Globally, exactly. You can go to iTunes or some other places. You can get your music without DRM on it, which means I can play it on my Android phone or on my Linux computer or wherever I want it to play it. Wherever I want to play it. It's easier for me to go to iTunes and spend my $1.69 or whatever it is.
99 cents for a track or something.
Yeah, whatever it happens to be, to buy a track, than it is for me to go and find it illegally. Mm. And so I'll happily pay for it. I've never objected to paying for good content. A lot of the shows that I've downloaded so that I could watch them in a reasonable time frame, I've then gone out and bought the DVDs or the, you know, in the future might be buying Blu-rays. Who knows?
Do you think what a lot of the movie houses and TV stations do these days is they geo-block. That is that you can't see it in certain parts, their content in certain parts of the world.
Yeah, and that drives me absolutely batty as well.
But taking that a step further, does that drive you to peer-to-peer? Does that drive
people?
Yes,
it does.
Yeah. So in the perfect world, we need to remove geo-blocking. We need to remove the old days of rights content management, whereas, oh, you're licensed to have it in this country and someone else is licensed to have it in that country, and until they're ready to release it, they have to prevent it from being...
Stop locking things down and making it hard for the people who want to watch your content.
Because that's the thing, isn't it? If a film or a video gets released globally on the one day at the one time, you can go to the shop and buy
it. Which most films do anyway.
Oh,
no.
No?
No.
No. And same with sitcoms and things like that of popular television shows. They never, thanks to the TV stations, if only Adam were here, they tend to sit on them for a while or delay them. And, of course, everyone chooses to watch them.
Yeah, except that they are starting to you know, do things. And you see them running promos about them fast-tracking shows and putting them on, you know, pretty close to their original US air dates. So they're changing.
Well, one can hope. We've got an interesting view from the couch this evening about EPGs, electronic program guides. Do you battle with yours? Do you have a program guide?
I do have an electronic program guide.
Do you actually record anything off air?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
You're the one?
Yeah. I am. If there's something on that we want to watch, we just hit right-click on the EPG and say record, or we can right-click on the EPG and say record series.
Now, you use the Windows Media Center,
Windows
don't
Media
you?
Center.
You
That's
love
right.
it from
It's really good.
Intents and purposes.
Works very well. Yeah, it works very well.
And you used, do you get the Freeview EPG, Electronic Program Guide? That's the one that Australian television broadcasters broadcast to legitimate EPG registered devices.
That's the one. It is the Freeview EPG, I think. Someone in the chat room will correct me if I'm wrong, on Windows 7, and the Media Center Edition. But it's very good. Works very well.
Yeah, so I was just reading Mark's chat and comment in the chat as well. I'd love to get a bit of Hulu over here, which is one of the very big US providers. I do have some proxying stuff on one of my machines at work, so I can snoop around over there.
Yep.
But it'd be great to get it legitimately, like Pandora used to be. Remember when Pandora first started? That's a music streaming company out of the United States. That went gangbusters for the first, you know, couple of months, and then all of a sudden they said, "I'm sorry, if you're not in the United States, you don't get the."
Yeah,
and of course, listen to it.
That also goes back to antiquated concepts of who owns the rights to what, because different people own the rights to performance rights to music in different markets, in different areas of the world.
I reckon our kids will laugh at us one day.
Oh, they will.
All this sort of stuff.
Oh, really? The UK legislation that was on the tip of my tongue before, but I couldn't quite just think of it in time, was the Digital Economy Act. So what they've done in the United Kingdom is they've passed this three strikes and you're out legislation, and that was the one that Graham was alluding to, whereby the ISPs have to disclose the personal information of their customers to the movie houses.
Yeah, without the intervention of a court.
Correct. That's right.
So I thought that the UK used to be a democracy, used to have due process, and you couldn't be accused of something without it having to go to a court to decide.
It used to. So that happened back in April, I think, last year, and was passed by the House of Commons.
Yeah, thin end of the wedge, people.
Well, here's some news today about the Australian government, and they're going to announce three inquiries, because that's what we do over here really well. We have lots of inquiries. We've got three of these coming up into copyright laws.
Inquiries do a lot less damage than evil legislation like that.
Well, yes. And one of these is likely to result in search engines, universities and other content providers being granted the same safe harbour protections as telcos and ISPs. So here we have our government looking to broaden the safe harbour system so that those who carry content which is otherwise deemed to be not squeaky clean can't be held liable for that content.
Well, again, with Google's just a search provider. So, it, you know, complaining about Google because something inappropriate pops up in search results, you know, that they didn't put the content up. They just, you know, told you where it was because you asked.
Yes, exactly. So, anyway, there's movement afoot here. We've probably got to watch another few weeks before we see whether they appeal. But it's very interesting to know that if AFACT choose not to appeal, that's the end of it. Then they can just lobby government and that's pretty much it. Really,
well, they can lobby government, or they can appeal and then they can lose again and they can still lobby government. So will there ever be an end? I don't know.
It depends how deep your pockets are, really, isn't it?
They need to embrace the technology like the music industry has done.
Yep. Yeah. All right, so, what do you reckon? Are they just wasting time, or is it just going to be one of those things, do you think?
Must have cost them a bajillion amount of dollars to do this.
I think I heard...
it's been adjourned now for a costs, like a directions hearing.
And that's the thing, is it? Because they're saying that there is sort of something to talk about, and we're going to redistribute costs or something.
Well, the judge will work out who pays the costs of the appeal, I think.
All right, this is Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ronian, Lena, Graham on the end of the panel. We're chatting about all things technological tonight. We've got Adam Turner's View from the Couch coming up. We're moving some of our guests around too. So if you're tuning in tonight, I can't remember who was promised this time around this tonight, but we've had a few issues. Dave Glover from Microsoft was going to be coming in on the 7th.
To talk about Phone 7. That was supposed to be easy to remember.
It was.
Phone 7.
Well, anyway, it's Phone 14. I mean, it's the 14th.
Is that how it's going to work?
I don't know. So, we've got a few issues which we'll deal with, but everyone's just doing musical chairs at the moment, so you just got the four of us tonight.
Woo!
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
I'd like to talk a little bit about Adobe.
Yeah, it's a feature, but it's a feature that has an unintended consequence.
No. Don't do that now. I can't do 70 meg right now.
Do you use MobileMe?
No.
Yeah, for the promo, what sound would that
sort
be?
Sort of like that sort of a noise.
Really?
Well, that's a fair question.
It is a fair question.
It won't go in the promo. I was quite confident of that.
Kids thought it was great too. They are. They're big, they make a lot of noise, and they smell.
Entertaining, informative, independent.
You're listening to to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Oh, if only you could hear what goes on here in this show during the commercial breaks.
That was one of the funniest things I've heard in a while, and we can't mention it on air at all.
Absolutely. And it wasn't rude either. It was all to do with dress sense, so... Anyway, maybe we'll have another show. A show that goes on out in the car park when we leave here at night.
I'm wearing black socks tonight.
You are.
We've determined that Andrew's got green socks and Lena's
I'm
socks.
I'm sockless.
And socks in fox. Fox in socks.
Oh, Lena is sockless, but her shoes match her fingernails.
That's how it started, yes.
Anyway, did you know?
This isn't important, though.
Thrilling.
We've got Adam Turner's view from the couch. Did I mention that before?
What colour socks is Adam wearing?
Oh, who knows? He'll come into the chat later and tell us everything. But Apple is debuting Intel's new Thunderbolt in a new MacBook Pro coming up shortly. Now, this is an update to its Pro lineup. And the Thunderbolt was formerly known as Intel's Lightpeak.
Just give me this moment. It's officially the fastest laptop on the market at the moment. Oh.
Well, it depends. Is it?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yep.
Well, there you go. Are you going to get one?
No.
Why?
This one's fine. Budget. I can't just go out and buy whatever I want.
Anyway, the MacBook Pro is the first device to use the new interconnect technology.
Which is what Lena's got in front of her.
Yeah.
She has an MacBook Pro.
I do have an MacBook Pro.
Okay. That's good. So, the Thunderbolt data transfers via PCI Express and displays using DisplayPort. On a single dual-channel cable at 10 gigabits per second. Now, that's fast. Mm-hmm. Like speed like that. That's really good. You'd probably do some television editing on a Mac machine. That'd be amazing, wouldn't it? All Thunderbolt technology devices share a common connector and let individuals simply daisy-chain their devices one after the other, connected by an electrical or optical cable. That's according to Intel. Sounds pretty cool, actually.
It looks like a little USB connector, doesn't it? But slightly different shape.
Mm. Although the DisplayPort offers bandwidth of up to 17.2 gigabits per second. Now, that's a lot. That's nearly 17 times faster than the NBN. Ah, dear. So we've got speeds like that. Thunderbolt's 10 gigabit per second shouldn't be a problem with a single monitor setup as running on a 1080p, which is your HD display and all that sort of stuff. So that sounds really good.
Pretty impressive.
Really good. Mm. So
one cable to rule them all.
Why aren't you going to get one? I thought you were a zealot.
I am a zealot, but I'm a zealot with a small wallet.
I got a raffle here. You could win one.
I could win half of one.
I'm sorry, I forgot they were yes. Anyway.
expensive, yes, but worth every penny.
Now, seeing we mentioned the National Broadband Network just a few sentences ago, it's probably timely.
In jest.
Yes, in jest, actually. It's probably timely, and I know Graham has opinions on this, but NBN critics misunderstand wireless. This is according to Netcom, which is a company near and dear to us. They're the provider of jelly beans and M&Ms.
And pens, a lot of really good consumer routers and hubs and access points and all those sorts of things that you build your network out of in your small office or your home environment.
Now, I nearly had a throwing moment in the television set the other night when I was
throwing
watching the Right Honourable Opposition Spokesperson, Mr.
Malcolm Turnbull?
Him, yeah. Did you see this too?
I heard him going off.
He got half a brain.
Kerry O'Brien's...
It was very disappointing hearing all this stuff coming out of Malcolm Turnbull's mouth, because he, up until that point, I thought he was a fairly intelligent man, but he quite clearly isn't.
He drove me to the Twitterverse. Yeah, I had to tweet about it. I don't know whether you saw that come out, but basically he was, spreading things which weren't just true, which was just bizarre. Now, I know Graham on the show last time, you came out and said that the new 4G stuff is going to be complementary to the NBN.
Yes.
And in fact, I think there is part of the plan to use 4G to service those people in the way out part of technology land where they just physically can't get fiber optics to and things like that.
That makes sense.
So, but the myth truths that were going around is that this 4G technology is going to usurp the current plans for the NBN. With fairly high speeds. But what everyone failed to realise that this finite resource, which Graham points out on a regular occasion, which is radio frequency, it can only do so much. You can only carry so much data on. And, of course, the more people you've got plugged in and connected, the more it has to share the love, like the M&Ms.
Not only the more they're connected, but it's related directly to your distance from the transmitter as well.
It is.
The radio signal quality has a big effect on the bandwidth.
So, yes, in a perfect world, it's like today's 3G. I think I did a demo in the office the other day to a colleague, and I said, here, have a look at this. This is Telstra's 3G network. Here we are in the middle of civilization, a lot of people, very densely populated environment.
You're only 15 minutes out of a major capital city.
Yeah, now, you know, this has been touted at, you know, speeds of up to 42 megabits per second in the chemistry lab. What do you reckon we're going to get here? Oh, 5 or 6? Yeah, that's true. Have a look, 300. On Telstra, on the big network. I said, well, that's because everyone in the proximity of us is checking their email, doing a Facebook update, downloading a movie, a song or something like that.
When you say 300, that's kilobits per second.
Yeah. 0.3 of a megabyte down. And every time, you know, go and do it now. Just get your speed tester and check out your local network, and you'll find that, you know, if you're in a densely populated area, that's the sort of speed you're going to get. And this is the same, you know, this is the same technology that's going to apply out beyond the city area. And don't forget, 4G is only going to be in the city, according to Telstra, by the end of this year. So, a lot to go for the country, guys.
Now, on the way to the studio here tonight, as it happens, I happened to switch on my radio in the car, and it happened to be set to what's normally news radio, because I'm a bit of a news junkie. I listen to news radio.
I was listening to the same thing, Graham.
And as it happens, the Senate was being broadcast.
You are a...
I'm sorry.
I was listening to it too. I wasn't even in the same car as Graham.
There you go.
To have it on.
That explains
Senator,
your mood tonight.
The ears pricked up and...
Senator Deborah O'Neill was talking, and she made another superb point about this, and that a lot of the advantage of the NBN and having these superb internet connection speeds that will provide is upload bandwidth, not download bandwidth. And, of course, this is something that also is neglected to a large degree on wireless connections.
It is.
So,
although 9 times out of 10, I can actually get a faster upload than I can on a download on Next-G.
Well, there you go. That's interesting, actually. But, one of the big advantages of the fibre network that they're proposing to put in is not just the improvement in download speeds, which everyone talks about, but the improvement that might be available or should hopefully be available in upload speeds. And you think, why is that important? The only thing that's going upstream is just basically clicks and addresses and pages you want to look at, and all the content comes back down to you. But what if you're a business that creates content? What
Hello.
If... Yeah.
Put my hand up.
Yeah. It's Andrew saying, yeah, that's him. Andrew creates video content.
Can I tell you how long it took me to get a television commercial from our offices to Channel... I could have driven it there faster the other day.
What, a 30-second commercial?
30-second spot. It was about 60 meg or something like that. It wasn't too much via the technological satellite communications that we have.
Yep.
And it took me 50 minutes to upload it. I could have gotten the car and driven it across to the station.
Well, there you go.
And the time that it took me to upload just one spot. And that was on a Friday afternoon, so everyone was home from school, obviously.
And that's just for a 30-second commercial. What if you're creating half-hour programs or, you know, half-hour training videos or stuff like that that, you know, could be anything. Could be a 15-minute... It could be a real estate agent, you know, providing a 15-minute video tour of a house.
But even
it
still...
It could be anything. I mean,
look at business doing off-site backups.
Every Monday night I upload over a gigabyte of this show after I do the work.
Yeah.
And that takes ages.
Gamers.
Know, why
gamers.
You know, gamers are sending a lot of content. They need to get it there quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is not an insignificant fact. The upload speed is going to be one of the big advantages for Australian business, and it's going to be money. It's going to be jobs. It's going to drive the economy.
As it does. Mr. Malcolm Turnbull, who's the opposition's communication spokesman, said last week that overseas trends in internet use were moving away from fixed connections to wireless. I'd like to see him back that up. I think that's complete nonsense.
He's pulling things out of thin air.
Yeah, and he said also that internationally, more and more households are moving to be wireless only.
Well, that may be so within their local network, but why would you be wireless over a phone network?
And why should the actions of a household...
It's too expensive.
Why should the actions of the average household dictate the entire country too?
Yeah, we're not necessarily talking about... Yeah, there might be a lot of wireless connections at a consumer level.
Yep.
But what about business connections? Mm. What about people that need fixed IP addresses and need bulletproof, reliable services?
And especially...
Wireless will never be bulletproof. It'll never work 100%.
No, that's true.
Mr. Turnbull went on to say that an increase in delivery platforms for the internet dismissed the need for the federal government to build a fibre-to-the-home network, as proposed by the $36 billion National Broadband Network.
I don't hear the Koreans complaining about it.
No, don't hear them saying, throw out all our optic fibre, please.
This is a waste of money, isn't it?
We'd like wireless modems instead. I think he's been poorly advised there. He's poorly informed. And it is unlike Malcolm Turnbull because he's an intelligent man. I don't know.
Well, he had a background in telecommunications.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to wonder how much of this is coming from him and how much is coming from what he's been told to say.
Optus have come out this week and basically also said that they should break NBN Co up into baby telcos. I don't know why, but that's what they basically said.
Who said that?
Optus. Speaking to the media at a Gold Coast event, Optus CEO Paul O'Sullivan said there needed to be greater level of transparency of deals being struck by the federal government, Telstra and NBN Co. He went on to say that the Singtel-owned Optus was worried that $11 billion of taxpayers' money being pumped into the network would distort market forces and give incumbent Telstra an unfair competitive advantage when transferring customers from today's network. They're looking for more transparency. Poor old Optus.
Yeah. Warlock in our chat room has published or pasted a link there to an RFC standard for the transmission of IP on avian carriers. So if you're wanting to get data from A to B via carrier pigeon, there's a standard for...
Now, in the news this evening, Graham, too, I don't have the information here. We're talking about some new jamming laws, which ACMA brought into... You can't jam wireless anymore or anything like that. So, because I think it was traditionally only radio or mobile phone networks and stuff like that. So,
yeah, the original, there was legislation to ban jamming equipment, but unfortunately when it was written, it was obviously...
archaic.
They just didn't give too much thought about future changes.
It was designed to stop...
And they named particular frequency bands that were the ones that were in use at the time. Mm. But, of course, since then, we've had a lot of changes. We've had digital television and digital radio, and we've freed up some spectrum, and we've sold some other spectrum. And, yeah, the frequencies that are in use now are different.
Do they do it anywhere else in the world? Or, like, as in, prohibit jamming?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Because it was done here, I think, in association to a prison. I think someone was making calls out of it, and then they decided...
Yeah,
because someone smuggled a phone in through the chocolate cake or something.
Yeah. There's specific... Both the old legislation and the new legislation has a specific ability to allow for exemptions for certain purposes, and law enforcement being one of them. So that possibly applies to a prison system.
Yeah.
But they'd have to apply for a special exemption to be allowed to use it. And I think that it's right that such things should be used very, very sparingly because, you know, you wouldn't want to be the customer next door to the prison who can't get access to services because they've
they shouldn't be building that prisons that close, if you ask me.
Well, but you know what I mean.
But where does that leave the accidental hero in all of this? That is the person who's running their wireless network just ad hoc or using one of those video senders, HD things that get video from one room to another room, and they block or create interference to someone else's wireless network.
That's not intentional jamming. That's a different problem. There's always been the facilities or the references in the Act to harmful interference that, if something's designed not according to the rules for the particular band and it does block other signals, then that would be harmful interference and that would be dealt with under a different section, yeah.
It's so complex, the law and technology, isn't it? They've got to keep up somehow. They do a sterling job. I wonder if anyone's listening to it. Well,
sometimes.
We know a lot of people listen to us overseas. Tell us about your jamming laws. It'd be interesting to know what you can and can't jam in your country. That'd be good. I remember when I was a kid, and I'm probably speaking out of school here, we used to build these little wideband transmitters on the size of a 9-volt battery, and at school we used to lob them up onto our friend's roof and it would jam the television signals. Yeah, that's the sort of things we got up to as kids.
Mm.
I wonder if that covers under the Act. Oh, look, you know, shouldn't go on about that. Dr. Ron, I'd like to talk, changing the subject here briefly.
Yeah, I think you should.
About your gadget of the week. Was it the website? I can't remember what it was, but it was about confession on the iPhone.
Ah.
App of the week.
Was it the app? No, we didn't have that.
I think it was the Hotspot.
Hotspot?
Yes.
Ah. Well, I've got news.
It was an app, though.
To follow on.
It was an iPhone app.
Yeah,
you had a follow-up to the iPhone app, didn't you?
The Vatican has put its foot down over the idea of confessing by iPhone. After news that the US users can download the application that you spoke of, Dr. Ron. In fact, the Pope was probably listening that night and he was horrified to hear your odd spot of the week.
Well, he's probably listening on his iPod. And now it was reported on the ABC's PM program and they said a new $2 iPhone app offered the Catholic sacrament of confession.
I wonder if they've got the Jerry Harvey problem. That is, if people confess on their iPhone, they don't have to go to church anymore and they're going to lose customers.
Like you don't have to go into the store or something. So what has the Vatican said?
Well, the Vatican's put their foot down and they've basically said, nah, not a good idea. There's a quote here from a person who I think I'll give his name a go. It's Federico Lombardi.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Anyway, he says, it is essential to understand that it's the rites of penance required a person dialogue between... I wish I could... This is... church speak. You can tell I do a lot of this, can't you?
Heathen.
Well, my idea of church was the swap meets on a Sunday. Thank you.
Oh, Andrew.
it's essential to understand that the rites of penance require a personal dialogue between penitents and their confessor. It cannot be replaced by a computer application.
Yes, the confession must ultimately be heard by a priest.
He went on to say... This is in quotes. I must stress to avoid all ambiguity. Under no circumstances is it possible to confess my iPhone.
Oh,
I wonder if they run past Steve Jobs.
The original thing that I heard back when this story first came out was that the Catholics were quite happy for this app to exist, but the point of confessing isn't just to confess. The point of confessing is that the priest can... assign
ways to repent.
I'm trying to think of the word.
Prayers.
I had the same problem as you.
And ultimately can absolve you of the sins that you've confessed to. With
his magic wand.
With his with his supernatural connection to.
And Lena just alienates 4.5 billion Roman Catholics from listening to Tech Talk Radio.
We should apologise now.
I'm trying desperately to talk with respect about people's religion, and you're undermining me over there.
Sorry.
Yes, he talks to his imaginary friend, and your sins go away. So
I didn't say that. That's way worse. So, I was talking about his stick that he carries around.
The point is, if you're a Catholic and you are a believer in this sort of thing, it's a priest that has to do it. Now, the Catholics were happy to use the application on the iPhone as a training tool to understand how confession works, and as a way of young people can use it to understand what confession is and how it would work. But it can't actually offer.
It's not rigid edge.
Absolution, no.
Guy in our chat room thinks...
No, don't go there, Dr. Ron.
Yes,
we've dug the hole deep enough now.
Thinks that the Pope is an Apple hater and he's waiting for an Android version.
Oh, dear.
I thought the Pope had an iPod.
It's more ethical that way because you can't make any money out of it. Hi, y'all.
So I'd like to say just now, we apologise if we've offended anybody. It's all tongue-in-cheek and it's all a bit of good fun, and I know our listeners are just like that. So anyway, now speaking of confession, Adam Turner has one to make for us tonight. So here's Adam's view from the couch for this week.
Adam Turner's view from the couch.
Australian television networks are finally offering accurate electronic program guide data, but there are gremlins in the system. I've long complained about the fact that Australian TV shows don't start on time. Australia's television networks deliberately run shows late to stop us changing the channel. We all know that if a show is advertised to run from 8:30 p.m. till 9:30 p.m, that it always finishes a few minutes late. It's a deliberate tactic by the networks, known in the industry as bridging, intended to stop you changing channels when a show finishes. All of Australia's commercial networks are guilty of bridging. It doesn't happen in the US or in the UK, because there the regulator has stamped it out. Australia's half-hearted regulator has failed to bring the networks into line, letting them get away with bridging on the condition that the electronic program guide embedded in the broadcast signal is accurate. It's related to the new parental lock feature, which I'll talk about another time. In theory, this embedded electronic program guide is to the minute accurate, but judging by ongoing complaints to the Australian Communications and Media Authority, the networks still struggle to stick to these schedules.
I've recently singled out Channel 9 for special attention because the EPG wasn't accurate on my TiVo. For example, Desperate Housewives starts at 9:35 and finishes at 10:32, according to the TiVo. Meanwhile, 9's EPG data continues to perpetrate the lie that CSI runs from 8:30 till 9:30. Now, I owe Channel 9 an apology. It's been providing to-the-minute accurate EPG data since late last year. This accurate EPG data is only provided 24 hours in advance. For example, early in the week it lists CSI as starting at 8:30pm on a Thursday, but on Thursday morning this gets updated to a more accurate time, such as 8:34. The Foxtel EPG is updated the same way. It turned out the problem lay with TiVo. All of these services obtain their EPG data from the same source, a company called HWW. As such, I assume that 9 wasn't supplying to-the-minute accurate data to HWW. When I realised this wasn't the case because the other services were accurate, I took up the issue with TiVo's Australian backer Hybrid TV. Chief Executive Robbie Minicola rang HWW and discovered there'd been a communications glitch. When Hybrid TV first signed up with HWW, 9 only offered a rounded EPG feed, such as 8:30, 9:30, 10:30. When 9 added a to-the-minute service late last year, HWW failed to tell TiVo this new service was available. Now that the problem's been discovered, TiVo's program data for 9 should be up-to-the-minute accurate, which is a win for TiVo users. Well, at least it's a win if 9 actually sticks to this schedule. Anecdotal evidence and complaints to the Communications Authority would indicate that the networks still don't manage to stick to these times. Now, I'm happy to admit that I was wrong about 9's EPG data, and I'm glad that I've helped get the problem sorted out. Of course, this doesn't excuse the practice of deliberately bridging, nor the other network shenanigans which have driven many Australians to source their viewing from the internet. Sadly for 9 and the other networks, even with an updated EPG, I suspect it's too late to win many viewers back.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Oh, we should have a competition at how many times we can use the word shenanigans in one radio show.
Or not.
Why?
Because then we'll have to do the mozzarella sticks quote every single time.
All right, Lena, it's time you earned your keep.
Tech Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
What do you got for us this week?
How cool is that? That's new. I have a little intro.
I know. Well, they're sending in these great suggestions on our chat. Pop down the back. We knock them up in a quick flash. And there you go. There's yours.
Very cool. I like it. I like it.
We should put you under pressure more often. That only took you a couple of minutes to knock up.
Squeeze it out.
Yeah.
Squeeze it out. Yuck.
No pressure, Lena. That's all. Everyone's looking at you.
Yeah, I know.
This is your music. I'm keeping it there because you're not saying anything.
There's a few news things happening at the moment. The Nintendo 3DS that we talked about a little while ago was released in Japan and sold out on its first day of sale. And it was hacked the day after.
Oh, well, isn't it? Not necessarily hacked the day before. What's wrong with these people?
Yeah, hacked the day after release. That's pretty impressive. They, just the Revolution 4 guys who make those little flash carts where you can store all your
The R4s. Your games.
Yeah, the R4 ones. They've managed to get them running on the 3DS. They don't run the 3D games on them, but they've got the DS games. So that's pretty exciting.
3D? You turn it up and down, don't you?
Yeah, there's a little nub on the side that you can turn.
What?
Well, it's not a nub. It's a dial, I think. But you can make it as deep or as shallow as you like. It's not really come out at you like coming out of the screen at you type of 3D. It's more depth inside the machine 3D.
Yeah. Okay.
Coming up out of the screen on a small screen is a problem
because
you have to have the screen. You could only on a small screen. You could only do it in the very middle of the screen because otherwise you have to to come up out of the screen. You'd have to have things that displayed outside the screen area. Sorry, it's getting a bit technical. I'm sorry.
No. Oh, how dare you on such a radio show as this? No. There was a bit of a kerfuffle this week over the release of a trailer for a game called We Dare. Did you see this?
We Dare, as we in Dare.
Oh, yes, I did see this.
I haven't seen it.
It's a, I don't want to say sex game, but that's pretty accurate.
You have now.
It's got it's a game you play with a few open-minded friends. And
is this why we don't have classifications like this in this country? Or?
Oh, it gets worse. It's rated 12 plus.
Oh, you're kidding. No. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, so it's safe for your 13-year-old son or 14-year-old daughter.
Oh, that's right.
Now, I saw a comment somewhere that the game...
That's Peggy rating. No, that's not Australia's rating. That's
what?
The,
that's Peggy?
The Peggy. That's the UK's rating system. PEGI.
Oh. Okay.
But it's...
very liberal.
In
over
the
there,
actual
obviously.
Game, you've got two little avatars, say they're bobbing for an apple together.
Oh, do we have
the
to
same
go
apple. You've got... In the trailer, you see two people bobbing for the Wii remote.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how the Wii remote registers you nibbling on it, but apparently it does. And there's more explicit things that happen in the game, but it's causing a bit of a kerfuffle. The thing I find gross about it is that it's rated Peggy 12, which means it's for 12 and up. I think even 12-year-olds would turn around and go, that's just tacky.
Now, the story I heard, or
have you
a comment...
Darth Vader in the background.
Andrew.
Right.
What?
You're not allowed near that machine anymore. Step back.
I'll try one more time. The story I...
Sorry.
I wouldn't bother.
The story I heard, or a comment I heard about this story, and I don't know whether it's true or not, is that the ad that we saw was a lot more explicit or a lot more sexually driven than the game itself.
Probably.
But that's how people sell things these days.
Relatively innocent, and the ad played up on that aspect of it much more than...
And it's made by Ubisoft, and they're French, so... You know, enough said about that. Enough
said.
The other big thing that happened is Mortal Kombat has been refused classification in Australia.
Oh,
this
that
is
means
more
they'll be able
R18
to,
stuff.
They'll be able to download it on the internet real
quick.
Yeah,
we can import it still if we want to play
Bring
it.
Bring it in electronically.
But it's not allowed to be sold here.
Can't be sold here in stores.
No, in stores.
And even...
Is it just violent? Is that the reason behind
it? It's very violent. All Mortal Kombat games have been very violent. The bit in particular, I think the scene they didn't like the most, everyone's seen in the trailer already, which was one of the characters takes his hat off and it's a metal disc and he throws it to the ground and it turns into a buzzsaw. He then grabs, this is the fate, you know, you do your fatalities in Mortal Kombat at the end. So you do your sort of your last KO, but it's got a big animation to it. And it's a bit of pomp and ceremony to killing this person. He grabs him by the ankles and pulls him over the buzzsaw.
Oh, good.
Lovely.
Yeah. You know where the buzzsaw goes if I say he's pulling him by his ankles over it. But it's the first game that's been refused classification in Australia for a few years now. I think Warner Brothers are going to appeal. They might get
And
through,
if they appeal, what will happen is that the same game will get rated M and 15-year-olds will be
quite possibly
encouraged to use
that. That happened with Aliens vs.
Predator. Which is completely inappropriate.
Yes, that happened with Aliens vs. Predator. They didn't have to change it at all. They just appealed it and they said, oh, all right, go on.
And gave it a 15.
Gave it a 15 plus, yeah.
Which is...
So you're telling me that you just have to go, oh, please, sir, may I have some more? And they go, oh, all right.
If you send a panel
but they don't just say, all right,
the game
adults can
through.
Use it, keep it away from the kids.
Give it to everyone.
They say, give it to 15-year-olds.
Yep.
What the...
It's wrong.
It's really wrong. It is wrong. We won't hear any more about the R18 debate until mid to late this year, I think, unfortunately, because there's a New South Wales election getting in the way. And there'll probably be some other election after that and some other election after that. We'll never get a result.
Oh, the carbon tax will be next.
Yeah, there'll be something in the way.
You're
all
in
the time.
A very negative mood tonight.
I'm not really honest. I'm not. But I'm starting to get over it. We've had so many things in the way of this classification system being ironed out. The National Classification Code says, for films and whatnot, states that adults should be able to read, hear, see what they want.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, give us an R18 classification for games as well. It's just silly.
Yep. You're allowed to have an extremely violent film, and you can rate that R, and you can say that under 18 are not allowed to view this content.
Yeah.
Why can't you do the same thing for games?
Exactly.
Andrew M in our chat wants to know, what console is it out on?
Well, you can get it on Xbox 360, but I recommend not buying it because that's region locked, so you won't actually be able to
Unless you've
it here.
Got it done a magic thing to your Xbox, I guess, haven't you?
That doesn't last long.
Doesn't it?
Updates come and fix those things all the time.
Yeah.
PS3.
I got another one for my GT5. It's coming thick and fast. Mm. Another 40 meg came down the other night
it's
as
good.
I loaded
it means
up.
Your game's getting better.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Bloatware.
Have you loaded it up in
so very negative
two weeks
and very gullible this week?
I haven't had it turned on for
about 2 weeks.
For about 2 weeks.
Well,
GT5.
Turn it on when you go home tonight. It'll be ready tomorrow morning.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah. Otherwise, you'll be waiting hours for a download and a patch and an update.
Yep.
Clay in our chat room says we must be protected from ourselves.
the government will save us.
that's pretty much what they're hoping will save.
Why do you laugh? Yes.
Speaking of gore, another thing that got the gaming world by storm last week was a trailer for a game called Dead Island. This is sort of Lost meets zombies. I know I'm over zombies. Everyone's over zombies, but this does look pretty incredible.
Well, I thought you liked zombies.
Yeah, somewhat.
Especially ones that eat beer and drink bacon.
Eat beer and drink bacon. No, I'm getting a bit of zombie fatigue, if I'm honest. Zombies everywhere right now. Yeah, like vampires. I'm a bit over it.
Do you watch Zombieland, the film?
No. I've got zombie fatigue. I can't.
Okay.
But it's an amazing trailer. You should all watch it. Even cinematographers and film critics were saying this trailer was amazing.
It's amazing how the game trailers are of epic quality. Yeah. I was watching a documentary, I think, on ABC the other night about the fact that the trailers make and break films these days.
They do.
And obviously that's the true for video games as well. You see a trailer and you go, oh, I've got to play that.
Yeah, pretty much. But I think there was so much hype over it that a lot of people turn around and it works the other way. They go, oh, whatever, there wasn't even any gameplay footage in it, because there wasn't. It was just a cinematic trailer. So you didn't actually see what you're going to be doing in the game. It was just more story, art style, what we're kind of, you know, just a pitch sort of thing at what it's all going for. But it was incredible. It was beautifully made, really moving, very graphic, but in a really well done way.
Dr. Ron, you're a Warcraft player.
No, I
Blizzard.
Was.
Blizzard Reformed. Are traditionally, yes, well, you went to the dark side briefly and came back. But Blizzard are traditionally big on trailers for Warcraft.
Yeah, they are.
The Cataclysm ones were, they hit everywhere, didn't they?
How true to life was the Warcraft trailer for the game that you had, which is the most current game? Did it?
Very close.
Yeah?
Yeah, very close.
So do you get all the graphics and do you get all the sound and the whiz-bangery
when you
jump in there?
Yeah, yeah, you do. You do. It's very, very close.
Oh, that's good. So you weren't disappointed then? It resembled the trailer quite well.
Resembled the trailer. Oh,
depends on what kind of trailer you're looking at. If it's just a cinematic trailer, it's not going to give you an idea of what buttons you're going to be pushing and how you're going to be using them. But cinematics and gameplay trailers are two fairly different things. A lot of trailers have both, but yeah. The other thing that happened, happy birthday to the Zelda franchise, who turned 25 on the 20th of February.
Does that mean they've been making games for 25
they've
years?
They've been making Zelda games for 25 years.
Wow, they must have started on Z80s.
Happy birthday, Link.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting, but a lot of Zelda fans will be very excited.
But then again, if you've seen Tron, the first one, that came out about 20 years ago, didn't it?
Yeah.
Back in the days of Space Invaders.
They love milking the cash cows.
Well, they were the good ones. Mm. They were the good ones, I would have thought. So, anyway, Tron didn't win anything today.
No.
Today being the day of the Academy Awards.
I thought it might have got a look in on soundtrack, at least.
Yeah. No, they got nominated, but they didn't win anything, which was good. And, yes, some interesting results there. I think the King's Speech got four gongs out of, I think, 8 nominations or 9 nominations, but they got the good ones. They got all the ones down the end of the show, best film, best script, screenplay, and all that sort of stuff, which was really good. Inception did well. They did in their sound.
Yeah.
Sound was just stunning in that. Have you seen it yet, Dr. Ron? Yeah, you saw it with your wife, didn't you? You've seen Inception.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, soundtrack in that is awesome. And, of course, the computer animation, second to none, done by some Aussies.
Yay.
There are a lot of Aussies over there. They're doing very well in Hollywood at the moment.
Yes, that's the sort of thing that Australians seem to do very well, this sort of technical, extremely good sort of work on that sort of level.
Have you heard of the Razzies?
No, what's a Razzie?
Yes.
A Razzie is an opposite of an Oscar.
Mm. Oh, okay.
They come out at the same time. But instead of the best film, they have the worst film.
Ah,
the worst screenwriting, the worst thing.
But, yeah, okay. Yep, sounds good.
The worst film.
Come out? Oh, they've come out.
The same time.
Yeah?
The worst film for 2010.
Yeah.
That's radio silence, so yeah, good. Was Sex in the City.
Two,
yes.
Yeah.
Which I thought was quite appropriate. My wife went to see that.
It was rubbish. I was a massive fan of the series. But the movies
Even the girl says that Sex in the City film was rubbish.
It was rubbish. It had nothing on the series. The series was witty, clever.
All I saw in the trailer, and apparently trailers are everything, all I saw was some guy with a six-pack washboard on his tummy, and that was basically it.
Yeah, well, you're not the target market to that movie, though.
No, but then again,
Sex and the City 2 wins Golden Raspberry Award. That's funny.
Yeah. Looking
it up. The Razzies are great. Go and have a look. There's some great. You can see. Have you got them up there on the screen, Dr. Ron? Obviously, you're having a look. There's some other great categories. I just can't remember them off the top of my head.
Yes, it's
old. Last Airbender got a look in as well for the Razzies.
That was one of the worst films of last year. Yeah. Yeah, and that looked pretty good in a trailer sort of point of view, but
yeah, I know a lot of people who thought it was going to be great turned up and went, "What?"
Yes, respected people. Anyway, Tech Talk, thank you for your... Is that it for games?
We got distracted there with trailers. Yeah, I think that's pretty much all we've got going on at the moment.
Excellent.
Well, I've got some exciting game news.
Ooh.
Oh, here we
What's
go.
What's that? I found a bargain basement PS3 copy of Wolfenstein.
Ah.
While I was out there.
You what?
I couldn't resist.
Not the old Castle Wolfenstein we used to play in the good old days.
It's the same Wolfenstein, but it's not doesn't look have the same gameplay. It doesn't look like the original one, but... That's all new and enhanced. New
they've
improved.
Redone it, have they?
Yes, for the PS3. It's really, really cool.
Does a German guard still run around the corner and say, "Whoa!"
Yes. Similar. They've got some crazy anti-gravity weapon now that the Nazis are developing. And when it explodes, then everyone flies up in the air and the furniture all goes up in the air, but stays up in the air. I'm trying to get my head around it. It's all very exciting.
For the PS3.
For the PS3, yeah.
Who ported that?
I don't
Who
know.
Would have brought that from the time warp in the TARDIS through to the 21st century?
I saw it there, and I think it was a pre-loved title, and I just was
where were you?
Just the right price.
One of those game shops looking in the bargain table to recycle.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly where I was. Yes.
Yeah, Brian at the office was looking for GT5 there the other day. So it's a bit new,
isn't it? It's still a bit pricey, GT5. As it comes down, it's still around about $100.
You can import it for a lot cheaper, but it will take 4 to 6 weeks to get here.
Yeah.
That's the only problem.
Yeah.
That you know, can you I
just
say,
it's well worth... Just buy it. If you want to do that, it's the best one out there on the market is by far. Have you got it yet?
No, not
Says
yet.
Says he looking across at Lena hiding behind a big microphone. All right, it's time we take a deep breath. We'll be back with more after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You've got to remember that compression is not your friend.
Is it for credit cards only, or is it FBOSS as well?
Steve Wozniak, there was
the traitor.
I'm down to 4 cables again, not 14,000.
Go away.
Click here to upgrade.
If you put your entire life online, you get what you deserve in some ways.
Optus have said sorry, and so say all of us. Fantastic.
This
all right.
This is why we can't have nice things.
This is why you can't have nice things.
Entertaining, informative, independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Do you remember a while back in Melbourne, we had one of those dissentful young people that decided to organise a house party, and he got famous over a house party because he trashed things or whatever. I can't think of the guy's name.
Yes, we won't say the guy's name because he doesn't deserve any more.
Anyway, correct. He's in Brisbane. There's another one. This guy's a hacker. Anyway, it was reported today that a South Brisbane teenager's Facebook page was reportedly hacked to advertise an open house party at his address that attracted over 4,000 RSVPs.
Oh, no.
See, you've got to know what your children are doing on Facebook, people out there, or anyone for that matter. Keep an eye on it. But Queensland police said that they were alerted to the party through Twitter, because the police watch Twitter, obviously, don't they? They're into tweeting.
Probably
even our police department tweets, I think. I'm sure all the other ones.
They aren't out catching real criminals.
Yes. Yeah, they can tweet about it.
Mm.
Mm. Anyway, Queensland police said they were alerted to the party through Twitter and contacted the family who lived at the advertised address. Police were told the family were not having a party this weekend and were unaware that their teenage son's Facebook page had been hacked. Well, that was the whole reason why they're obviously getting in touch, because you're about to have a party.
That'll be it.
4,000 people knock on your doorstep on Saturday night.
So the teenager didn't actually invite everybody on Facebook.
His page had just been hacked.
Or probably, is that just his story and he's sticking to it?
Well, you know, it's just a Brisbane person who's had their Facebook site hacked and had a party RSVP or thing put on their open house and made public for all and sundry to attend. So, anyway, the boy allegedly told his father that his Facebook account had been hacked into by some friends who advertised the party. Well, see, you've got to have a strong password. That's all I can say about those sort of things. And change them regularly. Don't you agree, Graham? You're a good one advocate for strong passwords.
Yes.
One with capital, punctuation, uppercase, lowercase, numbers.
Yes.
Misspell a few words.
I use the one the little gadget tells me to use, my little password providery thingy.
Have you?
Mm.
Does it remember them for you or not?
No, it just shoots out random passwords at me and
so
says,
then you've
use
got
this
a,
one.
Then go, you've got okay. a little black book that you keep them in, or how do you store your passwords? This would be a good segment, actually. We should work out
if
you
store their hide passwords. Them. In my computer.
Do you?
Yes. Only I know where they are.
Yeah?
Yep.
Where are they?
I bet you Dr. Ron could find them.
Okay. here's a strategy for remembering, for having a password that looks random, but that you can remember. Okay, because this is the hard bit.
Rhyming slang.
Okay, that could be part of it. Think of not a word, but a phrase or a saying that's popular, perhaps a family saying, an in-joke, perhaps not something that's generally known. Lena would probably use something like, this is why you can't have nice things.
Yep. Yep.
And take something
like...
You just
told everyone my password, Graham.
Sorry. Take something like the first letter or even the first and last letters of each word.
Yep.
And then you can mess things up, so you could have U rendered with the letter U rather than Y-O-U. Or if you've got any chance to put a number in, or you could have a number in a 1 in place of an L or something like that, or a 3 in place of an E. Include the punctuation, because that's important. That really does make it a lot harder for people who are just running random things against your password to try and guess it, because it puts a lot more characters in there they have to use. Don't just use a full stop, use other punctuation as well. And that way you can get a password that seems random by just having first and last or first or last letters of a saying, and you can remember it, because you can always remember that sort of family saying or that family in-joke.
Lena, there's a lot of people in the chat haven't got your password.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Any of those getting close?
Sorry, Lena.
Nah, there you go. Good tip though, Graham.
The other tip for remembering passwords, and I use this all the time with a couple of my stronger passwords that are random, do not tick the box that says save password.
On your computer?
Yeah.
What happens if you forget it?
Well,
don't forget it.
You're more likely to forget it if you don't have to type it every
day.
Right.
You're more likely to remember it if you type it all the time.
By typing it every day when you check your email, then you'll remember what it is, and you'll know it when you need it.
Though.
Yeah, I know, so that's difficult.
How do you store them?
You can handle that. How do you store them? Yeah, good. Well, I just store them in here. That's basically.
Says he pointing to his head.
Sorry, yeah, this radio, work on radio. yeah. There's a couple of strategies you can use. You can have a couple of passwords, one of the critical rules is never use a password on more than one system, because the system administrator can often get hold of your password. So don't use the same password on multiple systems. But in fact, for certain low security tasks, like, you know, your chat account and, you know, stuff that's not going to cost you a ton of money if it gets hacked. You can have a couple of sort of standard low security passwords that you use across many systems, and then reserve your good passwords, your strong passwords, for the systems that really count, like your online banking or your business logon that gives you not access not just to your email but to actually remote into your company server and all that sort of stuff. Those ones have got to be strong.
I had a transaction with the Australian government today. I had to lodge my BAS through the business portal.
Oh, yes. How did that go?
Oh, look, it was very painful, but for the wrong reasons. But their password, they use a certificate, which I'm not really averse to actually how it works, but you download, so they give you something.
They give you a digital certificate, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
You download it, you sign a password to it, and then even before you go submit to say, is this form true and correct, they actually ask you for the password again.
Well, your computer asks you for the password to unlock your key, the certificate, to unlock that certificate to be able to send it.
You're the gatekeeper?
Yeah. And the keymaster.
The keymaster.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how that works. A bit of script, because you've got to download bits and put on your computer. That's got to be the ultimate in safety, or you could look at it from paranoia's point of view too.
Well, yeah. It certainly is a very secure way of doing things, and it does...
I like to avoid looking at things from paranoia's point of view, because it's a slippery slope.
But you've got to have the hat on. You've got to turn it around and face the back and do the face the front. But anyway...
That's right. Yes, you do have to look at it from the other side, you know, to understand how would the bad guy use this technology to his advantage.
If I did that, I would put my computer in the fire and I'd go live in the woods.
No, that's not the answer. That won't help you.
It's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
Can't start.
No, there are ways to be safe without having to do that.
Oh, good.
So, Yeah, but you do use strong passwords, must have at least 3 out of the 4 following types, uppercase, lowercase, numerals and punctuation. Make it long, particularly these days with, I think it's Amazon is selling supercomputer time at very reasonable rates. It doesn't cost a lot of money to crack, to get hold of a supercomputer to crack a short password. Make your passwords long, really long. 8 characters doesn't cut it anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
So what do you recommend?
12, yep. 18, yep. 20.
What happens if some places don't let you put in that sort of length password?
Well, use the maximum you can.
Okay. That's good. See, storage is another thing. Where do you keep your passwords? Like, because as you said, Dr. Graham.
Encrypted text file.
Oh, really?
And then you have to have a password on that so that you can decrypt it. Yeah.
Yeah. My password's let me in.
Yeah. Little black book, maybe.
Oh, God.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Mine's password. No one will ever get that.
No, that's a good one, too. I like that one.
The issue is,
what about
of course,
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6? You, sorry, Graham.
If you do store it anywhere, if you do write it down in your little black book or you have a notepad file with it in or whatever it might happen to be, perhaps you put them in the address book on your phone or something like that.
Until your phone gets lost.
That's right. If the little black book goes missing or you think somebody might have had access to it, if your house gets broken into or whatever, it's very important then to go around and change all your passwords that were recorded in the book.
Maybe put it in the safe. Got a safe, put a little print out a little bit of paper and chuck it in the safe.
The other thing too, does it really matter if you forget your password with all the password recovery systems that a lot of sites have these days? You just go, oh, I've forgotten that one, click.
It's not about the sites though that's the problem. I wouldn't say, would it be?
No. But as Graham was sort of saying, the ones you use frequently are the ones that you know the passwords to.
That's true. Yeah.
Anyway. All right.
The safe is not a bad idea, and of course particularly if you're
as long as you remember the password to the safe,
you've got to remember the combination of the safe. That's right. But getting a little a small safe, if you're in business, particularly if you're running a small business or whatever, or even just everyone's got a few documents that need to be safe.
Absolutely,
it's not your title deeds or insurance documents, stuff like that.
Passports,
those sorts of documents, identity documents,
birth certificates.
It's not that expensive to get a safe that's rated to survive at least a normal house fire.
Or a fire safe.
Yeah.
You can even keep a hard drive in there, for your backups.
Absolutely, with your photos on it. And again, terabyte, external hard drives.
They're cheaper
than ever. They've really got to the point where they're very affordable, well worth not only copying all your photos and all your onto a hard drive and putting that with your identity documents in a fireproof safe, but also coming to an agreement with someone who lives in a different part of town, a relative or something, an aunt or uncle, whatever it might happen to be, make a second copy of all your photographs and put them in their safe, and vice versa. it's just not going to cost you a fortune to do it these days.
Sony, the one and only. They launched a music on demand service of recent times, which
did
you probably
talk about
seen.
This last week.
We did,
yeah,
we did. We're thinking of Curiosity, spelled Q-R-I-O-S-I-T-Y, just for the people learning how to spell these days.
These marketing people have got a lot to answer for in terms of the treatment of the English language.
They do. A couple of days later, they launched another one called Anubis.fm, a streaming music service.
Didn't he have a snake in his head?
I don't know. Now, Adam was talking about this in one of his articles in the newspaper, which I have here in front of me, where he says that only days after launching Curiosity, Sony have unveiled another service in conjunction with Sonos. Anubis.fm is a browser-based on-demand streaming audio service charging the normal price of $12.99 per month for unlimited access to new release albums as well as an extensive back catalogue, more than 2 million songs. Labels on board include Sony Music, Universal, EMI, Warner's and independent labels. So it looks like Anubis FM is the web portal to the Sony devices portal, which is Curiosity. Because I don't think Curiosity has a web portal, does it? You have to access it through a device, such as a PlayStation or, as you did, Dr. Ron, on your telly.
I hadn't looked into it to that degree.
Adam would know.
He's not with us tonight.
I think you can go to the Curiosity website and you can access it that way.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure you can. Let me just have a quick look.
Anubis FM is the first unlimited music service legitimately available to Australian Sonos users who until now have relied on workarounds for access to the US services such as Rhapsody and Napster. All Sonos customers will receive a 30-day trial of the service, which means you get your first $12 for free, but you probably have to sign up and give them your credit card, DNA swab, and all those other sorts of things that you have to do these days online.
And a password, no doubt.
Oh, of course. It goes without saying, doesn't it, Dr. Graham?
I'm not entirely sure what the difference is. You can go to curiosity.com, which, as Andrew said, curiosity is spelt rather strangely, Q-R-I-O-C-I-T-Y.com, and there's the Music Unlimited service there, where you can get...
Is that the $12.99 one?
You can launch Music Unlimited. Yeah, it's the pricing. Yes, it is. Yeah, Basics $4.99, and Premiums $12.99. But as you said, there's also the Anubis.fm streaming service.
Wonder if it's a little... Well, maybe the other one's download and delay, you know, download and play, whereas this is streaming. We'll have to look into it more. Adam will know. We'll ask Adam for next week.
Yeah.
All right, Mr. Assange. Assange. How do you pronounce his
Assange.
Name?
Assange.
Yeah.
I hate hearing Assange on the radio. It's awful.
It is. Assange. Now, a London magistrate has ruled that WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has been extradited to Sweden to face prosecutors over alleged misdemeanours. Well, actually, it's a bit more serious than that. Mm. Assange lawyers have said that he will appeal the court, but if he loses, he'll be sent to Sweden in 10 days. Now, this is very interesting. The reason why I'm talking about that, obviously, is that I think Sweden has better... relations with the United States, and I don't think Mr. Assange would go down too well if he was in the US at the moment, because they're taking it all very personally, what he's done with WikiLeaks over there, which has also in itself started a lot of speculation in the media. Is he being a journalist, or is he just being downright
annoying,
a naughty boy? Not the Messiah, if you know what I mean. So it's one of those, yeah, and he's an Australian-born citizen. I don't know where he lives at the moment, but I guess... Yes, he's a nomadic as we speak.
I would be too if I was him.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. But a lot of countries don't really think he's done a sterling effort for them. But what do you reckon, Dr. Ryan? Do you think if you had that information, would you make it freely available for all and sundry to look at? Or would you go, I don't think that needs to get out into the greater population?
Well, I think you have to be very careful. You have to make a value judgment yourself, I suppose. I would be very careful that I wasn't breaking the law. I'm not saying that Julian Assange has broken the law, but he's treading an extraordinarily fine line. Now, of course, none of the allegations that have been made against him relate in terms of his extradition or Sweden trying to extradite him to Sweden, relates to anything to do with WikiLeaks.
No, they're nothing to do with that.
Nothing to do with that whatsoever. They're to do with... allegations of sexual assault, which
is not what Tech Talk Radio is interested in the slightest. But
no, but there are people who are saying, look, it's a big conspiracy, and they're just trying to get him out of the UK, and you know, one thing's going to lead to another once he's been extradited. But I don't see how that can really work from a, you know, in a first world democratic where there's a first world democratic legal system like in Sweden. It's going to be a long stretch to say, look, he's going to be incarcerated forever, and they're going to take him to task about WikiLeaks after they're finished with this these other allegations.
I think the world needs a site like WikiLeaks, but because after all, they were the ones who broke Mr. Conroy's filter. That was where that was first published, if I remember correctly. But
I think, yes, they published a list of the supposedly sites. Banned URLs. Yeah.
So I've got an image on my computer right now that I've just brought up that made me chuckle the other day. There's a photo of Julian Assange and a photo of Mark Zuckerberg next to each other. They've each got speech bubbles coming out. Assange just says, I give private information on corporations to you for free and I'm a villain. And Zuckerberg says, I give your private information to corporations for money and I'm man of the year.
There you go.
That sums up how I feel
about it. Puts it into perspective, really, doesn't it? Vodafone Company nearly has doubled its complaints in the last few months, which is just quite interesting too. Just briefly before we go to the last part of the show, Oddspot Gadget and Website of the Week.
An application.
The telecommunications industry, TIO, that's them, the big organisation in town, has welcomed an admission by Vodafone that it has more work to do after a rise in its customer complaints. Don't forget, we did speak to Adam Brimo last week. If you missed that, go and have a listen to the podcast about why he wrote the site VotaFail whilst on hold to Vodafone. The Ombudsman reported that Vodafone complaints nearly doubled in the past 6 months. In a statement, Nigel Dews, who is the Vodafone CEO, conceded that Telco had a little bit more work to do. So obviously they've realised the errors of their ways and they're trying to make amends. Also briefly before we go, Google brings on Microsoft Office to Docs. Now this is quite interesting. The ability now to edit and share Microsoft Office documents to its own Google Documents online. Is this the merging of the two titans, I guess, online?
Mm-hmm.
Dubbed Cloud Connect, the move is seen by some as a direct attack on Microsoft's own SharePoint software. Now, Graham, you'd use that for servers and things, wouldn't you?
SharePoint?
SharePoint, yeah.
Yeah, occasionally, yeah.
Well, this offering enables users who work on Word, PowerPoint, Excel documents, and Microsoft Office 2003, 7 or 10 at the same time in two different locations through Google Docs.
Yeah.
It's quite snazzy, really, isn't it?
Mm.
And Google, would you please get Calendar Sync working 64-bit mode, please? It's very annoying.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it does 32-bit with Office, but it won't do 64-bit.
Oh, okay. Syncing so your calendar to your Outlook?
Syncing your Outlook calendar to Google.
Oh, okay.
To replicate through to your phone and all that sort of stuff. Very frustrating.
I just use the online calendar.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, you could.
And it syncs to my phone quite happily.
Yeah, but yeah. In the office, you want to bung it into Outlook. You want it Outlook, in Outlook. Yeah.
Do you use Outlook for your email, Graham?
No. I loaded the Google Connector to see if it would work and haven't opened Outlook since. It worked.
And
but, yeah, just haven't bothered. I use the web interface and I use it on my phone and everything's quite happy.
So you just use the web interface at home. You're quite happy using that for your email?
Yeah, I use it for my email, for my calendar. I use Windows 7. I launch it in app mode in Chrome.
Yep.
Using Chrome's application mode. And, yeah, both my calendar and my email, yeah, quite happy.
It's good. I use the calendar sync as well.
So fast searching.
Finally. Yeah, if you're searching for content in your emails.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm going to get the crowbar out in a minute. Find a way in between you two there.
Finally,
Google forecloses on content farms. You know what a content farm is?
A farm of content.
Correct.
Woo!
It's a web page that gathers up content they don't necessarily own and throws a whole heap of ads around it.
Pretty much. And also for the fact that it skews search results because people are now finding, or Google used to return people to search to these farms that you speak of rather than to...
Because they, very annoying. Yeah, they basically designed them to be found by Google, yeah.
Anyway, they've since in recent times put in a new algorithm that they do over there. And the new change has impacted on 12%. Of US search results already. So it's seeming to be taking a bit of a stranglehold. Because they do this from time to time. Nearly every 12 months, or every 9 to 12 months, they do major changes to how Google indexes and how they get all their stuff. Obviously, this is going to be one of them. But the new algorithm, Google's recipe for how to rank web pages, started live a couple of days ago. Excuse me. And the algorithm on a regular basis, but most changes are subtle for you to notice. So just keep an eye on what you're looking for, and hopefully those nasty little things will disappear off your search results. Because it's very annoying. The other thing that really irks me is when you do a how-to search and you get to a result and they said, please pay for the result.
Yep.
And that's normally associated with tech results and how to fix something on your whatever box you've got.
You start to recognize what domains these sites are running on, and you just, you see the result that's got the information you want, and then you look at the domain it's in and you think, oh, no, I won't go to that one because that's a useless one. And then you go a couple of steps down and you see a domain name that you think, yeah, I've got good information from that domain before I'll go to that one.
Yeah. But you can understand how punters would be upset when how to set up your wireless network and you get bombarded with ads for routers and
thingy-bobs. And then you get the first paragraph of the article and then click here to read more.
Yeah, and please give us your credit card. Yeah. Well, what sort of free internet is that? What's Spot Gadget website of the week?
And application.
What?
Then we're going to end an application segment.
Really?
Don't we?
Okay.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
You've got to remember that compression is not your friend.
Is it for credit cards only, or is it FBOS as well?
Steve Wozniak. There was a traitor.
I'm down to four cables again, not 14,000. Go away. Click here to upgrade.
If you put your entire life online, you get what you deserve in some ways.
Optus have said sorry, and so say all of us. Fantastic.
This
all right.
This is why we can't have nice things.
This is why you can't have nice things.
Entertaining, informative, independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole!
Wi-Fi enabled flash memory cards, Graham.
Is this good. This is the gadget.
Well, we both agreed last week that this has to be a gadget for this week. Have you got one with you? Graham brought in this fantastic gadget.
Slides back on his chair.
Now, what have you got there in that orange box? Apparently, these have been around for quite some time, but I've never seen them before. It's a compact flash card or a memory card, which is equipped with
Wi-Fi.
That's right. Yeah, you slide it into your digital camera in place of the normal memory card, and it's still got memory on it. So this
Lena, pay attention.
The one I've got.
This would be good for your camera.
A 4 gig
with your RAW files.
The reason it happened was because I was on site with a customer. And I took a photograph of something on a customer's site, and she's just grabbed the...
I see you never see that again, especially there.
And then I rummaged around in my notebook bag for half an hour looking for the cable to plug my camera in, and I didn't have it with me. So I had no way of getting the off the memory card into the customer's computers. What this does is this has a little Wi-Fi adapter actually on the SD card, which actually effectively adds Wi-Fi capability to my camera. So if it's at home, I can go out and I can shoot photographs at home, all around the place, out and about. When I come home, all I got to do is turn the camera on. It'll connect to my Wi-Fi.
I want one of these.
And dump all my photos onto my hard disk on my computer.
Defeats the purpose of storage, really. You can just pull it straight off your card and stick it on your
Yeah, when you get home, all you've got to do is remember to switch the camera back on, and it'll go and do it automatically for you.
Then you've got big files, I guess, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It'll take a while. Might be better to USB it. But if you've just got a couple, it'd be great.
But what it'll also do, if where you are, it has Wi-Fi. It'll send them as it shoots. So all I do is I've turned on my Wi-Fi hotspot in my Android phone, and it uploads them as I shoot. And it can not only dump them on your computer at home, but it'll also publish them to somewhere like, Picasa.
Yeah, and when you think about it, other things that take Wi-Fi devices, like our audio recorders, you could pop in and grab audio files off that, really, can't you?
Actually, the software is pretty specific to photo files.
Oh, bugger.
So, it's...
nice idea, anyway.
It is a nice idea, the software. And that's just the software that comes with it. There's no reason why...
How much, Dr. Ron?
Yeah. How much? Look, these... I know that there's SanDisk models, and they sell for up to around about $100.
Oh, yeah?
This model that Graham's bought is an iFi, E-Y-E-Fi. How much was that, Graham?
It was about $50 US. I had, unfortunately,
so $40 Australian.
I couldn't find an Australian supplier. I had to order it in, so I paid almost as much again in postage. So it was like $70 or $80 in.
That's right.
Must introduce you to our postage. US correspondent.
SanDisk have compact flash.
I just cracked it. I just wanted one.
This one is an SD card. So that's our gadget, the iFi wireless photo and video upload card.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
The website this week, paper.li.
Yeah, now this is cool.
Andrew and or Lena, take it away.
Okay. Lena gave it to me the other day. She said, oh, check this out on the way home as we parted in the car park at about midnight. And anyway, I thought, oh, I wonder what that was. I plugged it in when I got home and I thought, oh, this is pretty cool. Yeah. But correct me if I'm wrong, but it takes your Twitter feed, you plug in your feed of Twitter, and so all the people that you follow. So don't follow too many people, otherwise you'll get a whole heap of rubbish in your newspaper.
No, it's the same size as people who barely follow anything.
Oh, so it picks out the most popular tweets or something,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it does.
Anyway, we've got
things
one.
Things that get retweeted often, that kind of thing.
Got one for Tech Talk Radio. Have a look at the Tech_Talk_Radio Twitter feed, and it automatically publishes itself daily.
Mm.
All the goings on in the tech world. I thought it was brilliant.
It is
the
brilliant.
Odd, the odd ad in there, but nothing Adblock Pro doesn't fix.
What I especially like about it is I follow a lot of people in the UK and the US, and so a lot of stuff happens when I'm asleep, and I can check the paper in the morning.
I have that problem too.
Yeah, I can check the paper in the morning and see what happened while I was asleep. Just quickly, instead of having to sort through all my Twitter feed, I can just quickly see it all in one page. It's great.
It's a great idea.
Yeah, brilliant.
So, yes, if you have a Twitter feed, go and try it out. It's paper.li. Very simple, straightforward, and to the point. Woohoo!
Tech Talk Radio, app of the week.
Oh, Dr. Ron, we're doing an app of the week now.
We're doing an app of the week. Woo-hoo! By popular demand. What's this one, Andrew? File Expert. Free, yeah. No ads, it says.
This is an absolute doozy, this. I was looking. This is very much akin to what you and Graham have had for the compact flash card with built-in Wi-Fi.
Right.
This is exactly the same for your Android device. It's a non-compact flash device, a little program that uses the Wi-Fi in your phone to connect to your network. So, you know how you used to plug a USB cable in to drag your pictures off and do all that sort of stuff, and your music, you want to get your music to and fro?
Yeah.
Well, it just, when your device becomes part of your home network, you can actually connect into it through a web browser or through an FTP portal, and you just send stuff to it straight from the wireless network. So you don't have to get the USB cable out that you've lost. And it goes straight in, and it's absolutely brilliant, and it's free. There's no ads in it or anything like that.
So it's available in the Android market?
In the Android market. And it's if you just search for File Expert,
You'll see it there. And an absolute doozy. Highly recommended, I would say, because I've been using it for getting my music on and off the device so I can listen to it. My Sennheiser little earbuddy thingies that that we all tend to be using these days.
Okay. That sounds fantastic.
So, yeah, there you go.
Can I ask a question about the new segment? Very, very quickly. Is it all going to be Android apps? Or are we going to have iPhone apps and apps for other platforms as well? In the new app segment?
We have a cross-section of users in the Tech Talk panel, I'm sure.
I think mobile apps. What do you reckon?
I think it will be app of the week of any flavour. And what's it, what our users suggest, if they've got a doozy, we'll probably run it up in there as well.
Sounds good.
All right. Yes. So that was it. That's our first app of the week.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ma, the meatloaf!
Bon. James Bond.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
A man who stole an LCD television from the warehouse in Dunedin, New Zealand, was only caught when he returned to the store later to steal an aerial to go with it. To improve his digital reception. The 35-year-old Dunedin man visited the store 6 times on Friday night and was seen by security staff leaving with a television aerial without paying, said Senior Sergeant Craig Brown of Dunedin Police. The man was later stopped by police and the aerial, along with the television, was found in the back of his car.
Was this by aerial surveillance?
Mr. Brown told... We're going to have joke of the week at the rate we're going.
I don't think so.
We're running late. Quick, Dr. Ron.
Mr. Brown told the Otago Daily Times, he's not the sharpest tool in the shed. He should have and should have quit while he was ahead. The man will appear in Dunedin District Court later this week, charged with theft. The lengths that some people will go to, Andrew, to get a good, crisp, clear, sharp digital picture.
Okay. We should go. We're running over. That's Tech Talk Radio for this week. Same time next channel. You know what I mean. Till then, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Lena van der Venter. Expert opinion is provided by Adam Turner and our US correspondents are Lydia Davis and Mark Diggins. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. The show is broadcast, recorded and streamed live each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wishes to thank all the stations around Australia that rebroadcast Tech Talk Radio each week. Tech Talk Radio is also available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising inquiries, call 03 8682 9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.